Hi, it's Michael Sinoff with Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. You're listening to part two of the Glenn Osborne audio series. The title of part two is Your Quick Start Guide to the Sneaky Psychological Tactic Known as Neuro-Linguistic Programming. When Glenn's friend was in a poker tournament, Glenn taught him a few NLP tricks to take to the table. In the middle of the game, Glenn had his friend ask the other players about the good times in their poker careers. And by anchoring those good feelings to a gesture, Glenn's friend easily won the tournament. And his opponents never figured out they were simply playing loser when they were subconsciously instructed to. And in part two of this audio, you'll hear exactly how he did it. You'll also learn the basics of NLP, including examples of how to create an anchor without anyone knowing it. The weird but effective way Glenn used a Fredericks of Hollywood catalog to get into a $15,000 J. Abraham seminar for free. You'll learn a little story about the Frankenstein hypno handshake. Use this handshake and Glenn says you'll have about a minute and a half to pretty much persuade your subject to do anything. You'll learn the J. Abraham trick that made one gas station $800,000 or more a year by reading their gas prices. You'll learn why it's so important to screen everyone without them knowing it and all about the quick personality test Glenn does before he'll work with anyone. And you'll learn the real inside truth about J. Abraham's Mr. X book. You're going to love part two. Now let's get going.
Was he doing all the promotion? He didn't have a promotion company taking half of the money?
No, he had a letter shop doing the mailings. You know, he was on fire at the time. He had just been divorced. He was flat busted. He figured, well, I got nothing to lose. I've been doing this work with a lot of the hard money newsletters. He knew endorsement was the way to go. They trusted him because he made a lot of money. He says, let's try this. If it doesn't work, we got nothing to lose. So Jay was getting a big cut, and he also cut in the endorser, so they had a deal.
What do you think he paid the endorser?
I'm sure when he started it was 50-50, but later he discovered what he could do, and he cut their percentage down. I don't know the exact numbers, but I know that he reduced it, because he could say, look, I'm doing all the work, I'm doing all the seminars, I'm doing the mailings, I'm paying for everything, all you have to do is give you the list. So, you know, I dropped back to 25 or 10.
You were fascinated with all this. You were finding the smartest of the smart people on all these seminars.
I wasn't just watching. I was involved in all of this, so I could see it from the inside. Oh, I've got another story for you. Something else nobody else did. I was getting a magazine from Fredericks of Hollywood. I'm thinking, why the heck are they sending me a magazine full of brassieres and junk that I'm never going to buy? I was curious. I called up, said, men are a huge percentage of our buyers for their girlfriends and wives. It hadn't occurred to me. I just couldn't figure out why they were mailing it to me. So I thought, well, this will be fun. I'll try something. There were a bunch of little blondes and brunettes that Jay was paying minimum wage there at the office. So I bought each of them a wig down to their shoulders from Fredericks of Hollywood. So I had red, blonde, you know, whatever weird colors that were, bought each of them a wig. Then I called up, made sure that they got them. They were dancing around the office, wearing their wigs, giggling hysterically. And I said, I know you got another seminar coming up. Could you put me on the, I called it the worker slave list? Sure, sure. We'll put you on top. So for $150, I got to another $15,000 seminar.
That's a great story.
That's a good story. I don't know anybody but me that did that.
Explain why you believe the seminars in Australia are far superior to the ones in the United States.
Well, that's simple. I followed Jay to Australia. I already had people I was talking to, subscribed to a newsletter from one of the guys that he was doing his host beneficiary over there. By the way, the Australians are the ones to blame for Jay changing one of the names of his strategy. He used to call it host parasite, because what you want to do is find a big company with a lot of customers, a lot of salespeople, and they're the host and you become the parasite. You know, like you're sucking their blood with a mosquito. And the Australians thought that was a terrible metaphor, so he changed it to host beneficiary. But the original is more accurate, just not very polite. Okay, so Jay's over there, and I'm selling newsletter subscriptions for the host in order to get free copies of Jay Abraham's audio tape from Australia, right? I've got 5 or 10 of them. So you're listening to the audio tapes, and some guy stands up and says, well, Jay, you know, I'm from, you know, wherever he's from from some island somewhere off the coast, and it's illegal for us to advertise, all right? How are you going to get around that, huh? And Jay says, what do you mean it's illegal? I say, well, we get locked up. You know, it's in the law.
If they're an accountant, correct?
Well, professional practice, there's a whole bunch of them. Not all of them, but most of them. Can't advertise or they get thrown in jail.
And Jay didn't know this?
No. Jay said, you're lying. You know, you're kidding. You know, you hear voices. No, no, he's not. Accountant, attorney, on and on and on. And Jay says, oh, my God. So he says, well, okay, there's got to be a way around this. I've got thousands of ideas that we can run past. Let's see if we can invent something. So he starts, bam, 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 machine gun. What about this? No, that won't work. What about this? That won't work. What about this? What about this? Oh, my Lord. None of this came out in the United States. And then he would take the best of the best from Australia. They were having a really high-end seminar. Anybody who's made a bunch of money, instead of 5,000 pounds or whatever, we're going to charge you 25,000 pounds. I got the tapes from that. So guys would show up and say, well, I had this gas station with a little store, and based on something you said, we increased our income per store by $800,000 a year. And Jay said, well, how many stores did you have? He said, oh, we only had about, I think he had 11. Okay, so 11 times $800,000 profit extra. Jay said, well, what did you do? Now, I remember this because I said, okay, I'm never going to forget this one. Oh, my God. So the guy said, here's what we did. We figured out who our best customers were. They were people who had fleets. So we put a sign on the pump saying, we're going to sell petrol. That's what they call it down under, petrol. For they dropped the cost way down below all of their competitors. But you can't use the card at the pump anymore. You got to come into the store. So we tested this at one store first. So we changed the compensation of the clerks. We lowered all the milk, the bread, the things that people buy. But we increased the prices on everything else in the store, and we gave the people who work there an incentive. Anything you sell above the current level, you get a big chunk of. They said, boy, did that work like crazy. We told them what to say. You know, little scripts and things to do, and instantly the store started making $800,000 at a rate more. He said, well, the downside is we got hate mail and mystery phone calls threatening our lives. And Jay said, why did you get threats? We had lines. We had the cheapest petrol in 100 miles. Oh. So he started getting hate mail and phantom phone calls. We just laughed that off. And then once we got it running in one store, we perpetuated it through 11 of them. And Jay said, boy, I'm not charging enough. And everybody laughed. So then we go to the next one. That's a good story, isn't it?
That's a great story. You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Who's Mr. X from the Mr. X book? Was that a true story or was that a made-up promotion?
Mr. X is Jay Abraham's former partner at the gold company. Should I be sharing this? Most people don't know this.
Why not?
Okay, well, Mr. X was one of Jay Abraham's past clients. He wrote a book about all of Jay Abraham's marketing stuff and couldn't sell the book, but he was arrogant enough that he printed out thousands of copies. So eventually, hat in hand, he goes to Jay and says, what can we do about all these books? I've got a whole warehouse full. I can't unload them. Jay said, well, sell them to me for peanuts, and I'll see what I can do.
Was Jay pissed? I mean, so the whole sales letter.
Well, Jay looked at the letter and he said, number one, you don't have the permission to do this, but, you know, I'm not going to sue you. You're a past client or your friend. I won't sue you, but sell them to me at a dollar a book or, you know, I got some massive deal. There's nothing litigious about it. Jay didn't sue him. There was no ill will. It's just that the guy had a warehouse full of books and eventually admitted they're taking up space, costing him warehouse money, and he went to Jay and said, can you get these off my hands? Well, Jay flipped the whole thing and made up a story about lawsuit, the guy against his permission, Mr. X. The whole thing is a story to sell the book. I think he sold some of the books for, you know, $100 a piece or something.
$299.
All right. I don't know what the price was. But the secret is that these were books that the guy who wrote them could not sell. He had 5 or 10,000 of them.
Wow.
And he just gave them to Jay. And Jay created this massive reason why. Exclusivity. When they're out, they're out. Of course, when they ran out of books, they printed more. Yeah, it was a big joke.
Great story. Thanks for sharing that. So you went to all these seminars, and how soon after was it that you started doing consulting, following Jay's protege consulting advice?
I only had 18 months. I was going to get my money back if this didn't work as soon as I came back. For example, in the airplane concourse, there was a guy, again, name withheld, who was teaching NLP. And I said, I'm a direct student of Bandler and Grinder.
Kendrick Cleveland.
Well, you're getting me into a lot of trouble here.
Continue. And
anyway, Kendrick was hypnotizing all 500 of us. And as you are starting to hear, I am a counter puncher. You tell me something is red, and I will disagree. I inherited this from my father. If you were along with us when we were in a dollar store, they'll say, oh, look at this. And I said, you've got 10 of those at home. Don't buy it. It goes in the cart. I have to think, you know, if I'm not thinking. I said, no, I don't get that. So instantly, I'm responsible for filling the damn shopping cart. I have to think, okay, I don't disagree. We don't want all this stuff. So I said, okay, yeah, let's get that. And he puts it back on the shelf. So when Kendrick tried to hypnotize everybody there, something inside me woke up. I thought, okay, something's going on. What's happening? So he'd have a little exercise. Said, okay, we pick a partner, and we're going to have the partner experience happiness, the feeling of being sold something, or, you know, I came up with four or five different emotions that you could feel. So you got 5 minutes. Go. So, you know, I turned to the guy next to me, and so we went through happiness, the feeling of being sold, and two or three other things, and we anchored each one. He said, 5 minutes up. He said, okay, who succeeded in getting an anchor for an emotion? I raised my hand. So I said, well, we did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And Kendrick tilts his head at me and says, we should talk. Well, it turns out I'm one of these guys that are good verbally, and I have got a gift for NLP, hypnosis. I call it conversational hypnosis.
Let me interrupt. You said you did 5. You were able to anchor 5 emotions from the exercise?
Yep.
And that was extraordinary.
Both the other people couldn't get one. Yeah. I thought, okay, so I've discovered something that scares the hell out of me that I don't want done to me that I can do. Really quickly, I decided that this was something that I didn't want. Well, at that point, I woke up. I said, okay, I've spent a couple $100,000. I discovered that Jay Abraham and Gary North and these people who know NLP in print had taken $200,000 worth of my money before I got into Jay Abraham's seminar. Jay wrote a lot of the letters. To my knowledge, I was the only one that had that, aha, oh my God, son of a bitch. So instantly, I changed. I said, okay, I'm going to learn this to protect myself. Then I discovered that Madonna was using hypnosis in her lyrics. I discovered infomercials. I get a mailing and say, would you like to come to the mind capture seminar on how to hypnotize people through the television infomercial? Bam! Discovered that Steve Jobs and all these billionaires, they don't have lines by accident. NLP, Richard Branson.
Also. How did you learn all this? Did Kendrick teach you a lot of this?
No, again, Kendrick had an 8-step system for sales that I bought. And I went to Kendrick's advanced seminar down in Virginia. He put a bunch of people good at NLP together. We had a week-long seminar. It scared the hell out of me. He had people bucking like chickens. And, you know, when you see somebody coming down the row between the chairs going, bah, on their knees, that's a little startling if you're awake.
Everyone was hypnotizing everyone?
Yeah, Kendrick eventually got me, but I lasted 5 days. We'd go to lunch, and everybody would buy the same meal as Kendrick, except for me, which doesn't bother me. I'm always the odd man out, but that means I had the bullseye trained on me. So eventually Kendrick discovered that I'm very musical, and he started sing-songing some trance things. And I woke up in Florida. When we left, I'd driven, I don't know, how far is it from North Carolina to Florida? The wrong direction. Instead of going back to Baltimore, it took me about 1 day of driving to wake up out of a trance.
Wow. So he got you.
He got me. But it took 5 days. But my goal in life is not to be hypnotized by all of the self-made billionaires out there that have people lined up to go to the latest Avatar movie. Oh, yeah. Gotta watch that guy, too.
James Cameron.
Yeah, Cameron. He's dangerous. So all of these guys are using these secrets to sell us stuff. And the only way I know is to recognize it coming and say, aha, I see you coming after my money through my brain. So that changed my life. I have to thank Kendrick for trying to hypnotize all of us because that woke me up. And I thought, okay, I got to learn this or I'll just be a puppet.
All right, that's interesting. So this Kenrick story started because I asked you, how soon did you start consulting?
And that's where I started. As soon as I was on the airplane after the first protege seminar in 1989, I think it was September, I was on a plane back and I was mirroring people. This is the story I put in a newsletter early on. Kenrick didn't share all of the things that we needed to know. So I learned by making mistakes. I noticed that there was a Marine dressed in uniform sitting there, and there was nobody near him. And I'm in my little blue suit, right, with my red tie. So I thought, okay, if this rapport stuff, I'm 150 pounds, he's 200 pounds of muscle, he's 6'6", I'm 5'10". If this stuff works, I'd be able to hypnotize the Marine, right, without saying anything. So I'm full of myself, sit down right next to the guy. He looks over at me, corner of his eye. So he doesn't talk, I don't talk. So he crosses his legs. I cross my legs. He crossed his arms. I crossed my arms. You know, I'm imitating him. It's called mirror pacing. So 5 minutes goes by, and suddenly he turns to me and starts talking. And he tells me about his brother. He's a heroin addict. And his sister, who's got problems. She keeps marrying some deadbeat that he has to get her out of trouble. And he tells me his business, what he does, is build solar porches. And then he starts making remarks of any woman who's cute. He starts making disparaging, we'll call it, remarks. Hey, honey, come on over here and sit on my lap, you know. And remember the story of the sorcerer's apprentice, where he knows how to get the broom to carry water to fill the tub, but he doesn't know the word to stop? That was me. How do you turn this guy off? So first he started insulting a bunch of women, so we were in big trouble there. He didn't care. And then a bunch of Marines just back from boot camp came by. And he got into a fight with them. And I started calling them names and pushing. Just then they called for my plane. I could have gotten beaten to a pulp. I said, thank you. Oh, my God. So I started studying. I said, okay, I only know the first part of this. I need more.
So this all occurred from the pacing him, mirroring him.
From the pacing.
And it just opened him up.
Yep. I didn't say a word. He started talking to me.
Were you acknowledging his speech to you?
Well, as soon as he started talking to me, I started listening, nodding my head, saying, oh, that's interesting. But I didn't know how to stop. In other words, we had an unbreakable steel connection where I was his best friend and anything was permissible. Now I know. I've renamed my website to reflect the energy that was happening. What I had done was linked my electrical aura with his. We were one. That's why I don't like crowds. When you have a crowd of basketball or football people and they're all pulling in one direction, that means their auras link. Now we've got lightning. Anything that happens, fire or rape sets the whole thing afire and hundreds of people get trampled. So I don't like big crowds anymore because I know the potential. Now what I think of when I'm doing an LP in order to find out what people want, think about linking our electrical system, a la Nikola Tesla. Tesla is now a mentor. Billionaires are now mentors. Watch what a bunch of these guys do, and now you learn. So to bring all this stuff forward, I've just recently discovered a higher level of NLP than I knew existed, or hypnosis, because I helped a guy sell his company to Steve Jobs a few years back, and Steve turned it into the App Store. The guy that I helped was getting more hits to his website by giving away free Apple applications.
For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com.
Is this Randy?
Yes, it's Randy.
So tell me, who is Randy? And let's go into that story, how Randy got Steve Jobs on the phone.
Randy is a patriot. He volunteered to go to Iraq twice.
When did you meet him?
Never met him.
Never met him?
I met him on the phone. He was a black ops CIA operative. One of his problems was that when you have $1 million invested in your training, they also put a drug cocktail of things into your system to where you're resistant. You could put, what is the stuff that is supposed to be the truth serum?
Sodium barbitol.
You can feed Randy phenobarbital all day, and he won't even hiccup.
How did you first meet him?
I was selling stuff on eBay, and he bought something from me, and then I called him up, and it turned out he had gotten cancer from being sprayed with Agent Orange in Iraq. In the desert. Turns out they used Agent Orange in Vietnam to take the leaves off of trees so they could see the Vietnamese soldiers. But it was carcinogenic. They used Agent Orange in Iraq to link to things that would burn. So So from an airplane, you could spray some of Saddam Hussein's military vehicles, and the Agent Orange would link to the metal, and they'd have a, what do they call it? There's some kind of a word. Accelerant. That's it. Accelerant. So then they could burn them from the air. So Randy got sprayed with Agent Orange while he was doing some maneuver out behind enemy lines and got cancer. So his wife died. All of his friends died. I had, of course, gotten referred to people who had different things that would keep you healthy. So I started dosing him up with super spinach, a couple other things, and he was the only man to walk out of the cancer ward at the big medical facility. So he was online and bought something, and he apologized, but he said, I need to hawk something of mine before I can pay for what I bought. I said, well, what's the problem? And I said, well, forget that. You don't have to hawk anything. He said, well, you know, I just got back. I've been in the hospital. My house is about to be foreclosed on. You know, I need money. I said, okay, well, let's make you some money. What would you like to do? He said, well, I'm starting to learn poker. Could you help me make some money with poker? I said, no problem. I've got three or four people who are making $1,000s with poker. He went online. This is before the United States outlawed all the poker websites. There's still a few, but they had to change their modus operandi. So Randy's on a poker site, and he invites me in, so I'm watching him play. I said, okay, which avatar around the table? Have you ever been on a poker website?
Yes, I have.
So then you know what it looks like. So you got a poker table virtually, and each person who's playing at that particular game has an avatar. Well, I didn't tell Randy to do this. He's just brilliant. He took psychology in school, and the guy is a student of human nature. So I said, which avatar is yours? He said, look for the blonde. It says blonde from Texas. That was his name. So he's got a blonde wearing a red bikini as his avatar. I said, Randy, you're not a woman. He said, yeah, but I tested, and they'll let the woman win.
Wow.
So he called him Weedy. So within 2 weeks, he'd made $5,000 in online poker using a couple of my ideas.
Was it your idea?
Yeah, I taught him some NLP to use in print. He came up with the female, so he made $5,000. I said, okay, so I can pay my house payment this month. Wow. And he sent me a little money. So a bunch of things happened. You know, Randy found this beautiful girl who was one of a team on the radio, and he wanted to get a date. So I said, well, no problem. Let's start writing her love letters. You know, so we'd write her a love letter, which rhymed with her name, and we'd put a lottery ticket on top. And then he'd mail that in, and then he bought her some roses. And then I said, okay, Randy, call up and talk to the guy and explain that you're going to read her a poem on the radio. I said, they are desperate for entertainment and live stuff. So if you can help them entertain their audience, you know, you're on. So instantly, he became the Texas soldier who'd been to Iraq, and he could tell them stories. Oh, man, he was curling their hair. Then they hit upon the idea of having a contest to win a date with this girl, because Randy had started. He said, okay, Randy, you'll probably win, but we're going to have this contest. So we came up with all kinds of stuff, and, of course, he won the date with the beautiful blonde. And I said, okay, so what you won was a free entry. You don't have to pay to go to this poker tournament. Well, I didn't know, but apparently Randy did. He knew what the reward was. So he says, Glenn, now you got to help me at the poker tournament. I said, okay, where is the tournament? He says, well, it's at a men's club. I said, you mean a men's strip club? He said, yep. I said, well, this is going to be interesting. Now, we won't go into X-rated, but this will get R-rated. You okay with this?
Yeah, no problem.
So I told him how to hypnotize the people at the table because he needed to pay his rent. Everybody else was there. They had money. And I figured it was for a good cause. He was about to lose his house.
What do you instruct him to do to hypnotize the other poker players at the table?
He'd say, what's the most money you've ever won at poker? All right, that's pretty simple, right? So, Michael, have you ever played poker?
Yeah, but just for fun with family members. But
so you probably haven't won any money. Have you won at the lottery? Or? Well, I know you enjoy selling. So what's the most fun you've ever had at a yard sale? Hear me tap the phone?
Yes.
Okay. Because you wrote a newsletter about finding some collectibles at the yard sale. So I said, what's the most valuable thing you've ever found at a yard sale?
And you just anchored that noise.
So I just tapped on the phone. All right, now, with Randy, I said, okay, what you want to do, Randy, is tap your arm. You know, you could tap your arm or wiggle your fingers. Make a unique gesture, something that you don't do over and over and over, just one time. Now, Randy has taken this idea. He called me one time from a casino in Oregon, where he'd gone up to visit a relative who was very wealthy. And she had loaned him $50,000, and he walked out of the back room with almost $300,000. He said they put guards on all the doors. They were all armed. They were trying to pressure him. Of course, he's CIA. I was on the phone with him one time, and he said, oh, got something in the backyard. He said, they taught us to shoot blindfolded in the dark. He said, so it's pitch dark out there. I don't know what it is, but something in a tree in the backyard. So he took a pellet gun. He said, just a minute. Bam, bam. Shot a raccoon out of the tree in the backyard by ear sight. So I'd say the black ops guy are pretty well trained.
Did he explain how that worked?
How what worked?
How they taught him to shoot in the dark?
I have stories that I can go 6 or 8 hours straight from Randy, because I tell him a story, because I'm talking to people all over the world, and then he'd come back with something he did.
I just interviewed a guy, a blind guy, this morning, who was practicing bouncing a ping pong ball on a ping pong paddle, but blind.
Huh. That would take some skills. Well, basically, what he said they had him do was you'd use, like, the pellet rifle, but wherever you shot would have a unique sound, so you could tell whether you're accurate or not. Mm-hmm. Basically, Annie Oakley never aimed a gun. She could tell by feel. She had shot so many rounds that she could hit the bullseye, you know, while she's jumping over tables and stuff. She didn't really have to put her eye up to the stock of the gun and shoot. She could almost shoot from the hip. So he's doing something similar.
Interesting. All right, so he asked the players around him what's the most money they've ever made. He would do a unique gesture to anchor that feeling, and then what?
And then when he had a really good hand, he would use the gesture, and they would play loose. That's a terminology for getting reckless. In other words, you suddenly remember this emotional, oh my God, you know, this feeling of being rich. And they'd bet money when they shouldn't, and he'd take the hand.
And did that work for him at that strip bar?
Oh, yeah. Well, it started to work, but then he improved on it, and the anchor got a lot better. He made a deal with the stripper at each table. Every time he won a hand with their help, he'd say, I'll give you 10% of anything I win. I'd give her a chip. So they would start taking their clothes off during the poker game, and that was the anchor. You know, he turned the anchor into money. So he would throw his anchor, you know, she knew what to look for. So she would take her blouse off, or brassiere, or whatever. He was obviously in their eyesight, giving her some of his money. Every time he'd win a hand, they'd say, thank you, Randy. Thank you, Randy. You know, and she's 38, 26, 36, and really beautiful, and not really paying attention to the poker game, and he was able to clean them out, because his girlfriend over there was bobbling and wobbling, and they've lost their minds, and they just kept saying, thank you, Randy. Thank you, Randy. They didn't care.
That's interesting. Good story.
He won the entire tournament from table to table to table. He cleaned them all out.
Did you go with him?
No, no.
You just told him what to do.
One of the things about Randy is, and he recently died of cancer, it got him, but he is such an extreme entrepreneur that he reminds me of Jay Abraham. He can burn you out if you're around him for long periods of time. Also, the way his relationship and mine worked was that I never asked him anything personal. You know, he'd have me listening on the phone when he talked to various people, but I wouldn't say a word. I'd be the shadow person. Randy had a massive ego, and I let him rock and roll. I've discovered that for every emotion that you feel, there's a body signal. Now, I didn't get this from Kendrick. I found a man who's supposed to be the best in the world. The time that I got referred to him, he owned a half of an island off the coast of Oregon. He'd been in real estate, he'd built entire companies, you know, the guy was worth a lot of money. And hypnotists, NLP consultants, therapists from all over the world would send him their worst patients that they couldn't heal, and he'd fix them. So he's the guy that one of my customers insisted on going to the island. I said, no, no, you don't want to go. He said, no, I'm going. Came back, the guy had mind wiped him. In other words, he couldn't remember 2 days at the island. But he would wake up and say, oh, I remember something. So then he'd call me at 1 o'clock in the morning. Say, hey, Glenn, remember I was out at the little old man? The man's name is Dr. Dave Dobson. He's dead now, so we can talk about him. But I called him the little old man on the island. So Dave erased his memory. So he told me what he remembered, and I turned it into the Frankenstein hypno handshake. You can literally shake hands with anybody, and I discovered it by accident. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just testing. It overwhelms the conscious mind, and whatever you say next, people do, which means it's dangerous. So you shake hands, and they'd say, I'd like you to jump up and down, or I'd like you to give me your wallet. They'll do it. You've got about 45 seconds to a minute and a half while they're gone, you know, before they wake up.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. So how were you making money as a consultant? How did your consulting fees work? I like your approach.
I've changed.
How'd you start then?
Yeah, here's how I started. Somebody would stand up, or I'd overhear them say, here's a good example. I met a woman who was doing condominium rental sales. In other words, you buy a condo, and when you're not living there on vacation, you rent it out to somebody like her. So she has thousands of these units, you know, on her books, and it's her job to try to keep them full. If she doesn't find anybody to put in them, she'll probably find another sales agent. So anyway, she was saying, I don't see how any of this J. Abraham stuff is going to work for me. And I overheard her, and I said, oh, let me try something for free. I'll do it for nothing. And then you can pay me out of the money you make.
That was Jay's approach. If I could show you how to make a dollar, would you share 25 cents?
Yeah. So this is how I sold a bunch of seminar seats. This is how people hire me because they want more. My first partner, I heard about Judy Kendall, who had built Puzzbuster radar detector from $50,000 to like $19 million.
I remember that story.
I heard about her and tracked her down through the J. Abraham Network because people couldn't understand. This woman's doing all this free marketing. You know, you can't make any money like that. I knew what she was doing, so I called her up, and we became partners.
I think I've spoken to her on the phone, actually.
Yeah, she's a really nice girl.
Is that her, the one who was doing the condominium rental?
No. Condominium rental's another woman. We're going to do that story first, because I can't mention her names, because she ripped me off. I've made thousands of dollars telling this story. So I have this advertisement, and the sales letter, and the ad, and the postcard in some of my copywriting. My heroin on paper, NLP in print copywriting course. You know, it's in there. So it's made me a bunch of money. All right, so basically, I spent some time with her and I said, okay, what's working best? She said, well, we have a bunch of repeat customers. She said, but I can rent my condominiums out cheaper because most of my competitors, when they do janitorial and, you know, we have to maintain all this stuff, they rent a place inside each high-rise. And it's more expensive. I have one central location, and we, you know, drive back and forth to various places in a truck. So, you know, it's very low cost. And I said, okay, so let's put that in the postcard. So on one side of this postcard, we're going to do a mailing. We put something about, you know, guaranteed way to save a bunch of money on your condominium rental. Then she said, well, we have a big competitor that's putting ads in airline magazines, and she sent me a copy of their full-page ad. So I stole, well, borrowed their headline for the other side of the postcard. All right, so she mailed this postcard to their 2,000 best repeat clients. And she called up happily because they've made $50,000, made $80,000, $100,000, $200,000, $400,000. Then when I called up, she stopped returning my phone calls.
Had she paid you already some?
No, I never paid. I did this for free. The postcard I did for free. I said, you've been spending $100,000 a year on marketing. You're putting ads in all these magazines, all these newspapers, up and down the East Coast. You're doing all the expensive stuff, and we can do better and keep the pipeline full. I said, this $400,000 is just a tip of the iceberg. She didn't want to pay me, so she stopped returning my phone call. Now, the funny part of this story is that she didn't tell her husband. So they did another mailing of my postcard idea, right? And, of course, they didn't like what I did, so they changed it. So he called me up and said, Glenn, we did another mailing of your postcard, and it bombed. We didn't make any money. I said, well, send it over here. So he faxed it. And so he had a picture of a bum on a park bench. And on the other side, you know, some copy said, you know, rather than spend your time hanging out on a park bench with the rest of the bums, you know, you should show up and enjoy a luxury condominium, you know, vacation. So I called him back, and I said, okay, here's your problem. You didn't put the phone number in so people could call up and order. Yeah, completely incompetent. Anyway, I figured she walked away from millions of dollars by not returning my phone calls after I made her $400,000.
Yeah, I came back to her. From a consulting point of view, what's the lesson?
Well, the consulting lesson is now I invisibly evaluate people's personalities. In other words, I can do a fun, entertaining, for example, right on the phone. Right now, I have a system, a six-hour CD program system, that instantly lets me read your mind. So if I hear you while I'm doing your handwriting analysis, talking about a lot of hell traits, which I never tell you, I decided I'm not going to work with that person. Now, I didn't just invent this. My $429 million mentor, Walter Hilly, taught me this. He doesn't work with customers, joint ventures, employees, partners, or vendors, unless he evaluates them with handwriting.
Interesting.
So I turned it all into a system and added a card deck.
Let me ask you a question. So do you think if one had very poor penmanship and they trained themselves to create the finest, cursive, most beautiful penmanship?
Mark, I tell people, please do me a favor and help me try out my new hobby. However, this stuff is so deadly accurate. Turns out your handwriting and your brain are hardwired. So if you write something right now in front of you, and I can go through a couple things, you'll have to admit that I'm deadly accurate with this. Yep. I can tell you whether you're a detailed person or a big picture, you know, whether you have high energy or you need exercise, you know, do you have a bad temper, which I would not tell you. Can you keep a secret? Just based on how you tell me you form your letters. You wouldn't want to tell a client something. He's going to blab all over the place. So some women and men have an antagonistic relationship with the opposite sex. Comes out in their handwriting. I won't work with you. You know, I don't tell you. So you can instantly skim off the negative poison people. And there's some really famous speakers who have created products around thousands of millionaires. And they say if they had to do it over, they would avoid negative people and not marry their wife or not get involved in this or that. But he says it doesn't take money to be able to do that. Just be careful. So Walter says one rotten apple can destroy your company. I can't tell you the number of people who are living in friends' basements. You know, their wife divorced them, sold the house twice, or some guy's secretary stole a bunch of money, disappeared. It's not small. I can't count them on my hands and fingers. It's dozens, dozens, dozens. It's really important, especially since Mr. Clinton and a few other business people have sort of given the American people permission to lie and cheat. It's really become important to screen your customers, partners, everybody.
What was the marketing consulting lesson with this situation?
Screen everybody you do business with, but don't tell them they're being screened, so you don't insult them.
And you have some information on your site about analyzing their handwriting.
Well, I've got six or eight ways of doing it. The easiest is called How to Test and Tease Women Before You Meet Them. Right now, why do I have a wacko headline? Because I was selling on eBay a lot of my systems. So guys would buy this for flirt and dating purposes. But it turns out that a lot of my business owners love to try flirting, you know, a $1 billion idea on flirt testing first before they'll risk it with a client. So, you know, it's worked out really well. I couldn't get people to test out $1 billion idea on their customers, but they'll flirt with it and tell me what happens. So I've built a huge worldwide network of people who are running around laughing all day, trying out sales ideas on pretty women and stud muffin men. The women are the best at it. They don't really need coaching, but the guys, us poor bastards, need more help. So the lesson is you need to screen without letting the other person know that you're checking to make sure that they're not a lying, cheating bastard. And, of course, they're not going to raise their hand.
All right, so that was one consulting gig early on. How about a contingency consulting gig you did where it did work out good for you? You made someone a ton of money, and they were legit and paid you.
Okay, well, here's one. I found a janitorial. That's one of my many jobs. I've had about 50 jobs that I've gotten fired from over my life for scaring my bosses or the owner. So I found a janitorial supply company out in Oregon, and he paid me $4,200. This was when I was working with Judy. So we went out there and looked, and we wrote a series of newsletters, and each newsletter gave away a free report. So he started mailing. What we did, he rented names from SIC code list. So that's a special list that you can get based on number of employees. So you can figure out, okay, you can get them within a zip code. You can evaluate them by the number of employees. So they're a certain size. You know, they all report certain things back to the various groups. So you can rent these lists. So we rented the SIC code list of his best prospects. And we started doing these mailings. This was early on. This was our first client with Judy, where we started flexing our muscles. So within 90 days, they had made $300,000-$400,000. One of the things we did was tell people, hey, look, we know you own a building, and you have some janitor who's working out of his trunk. And we know he's cheap, but we got toilet paper and towels. He's going to the local Sears and buying them retail. We buy by the railroad car. We can save you a ton of money over a year's time. And you just hire the janitor and buy the paper and supplies from us. So they started making repeat sales, huge amounts from there. And then they had a bunch of clients that they added because they had a system of cleaning. They also had a separate company that was doing high-end cleaning in microchip. You know, these billion-dollar factories that make microchips?
Yes.
So, you know, they really had their stuff together. But after we left, again, we didn't know what we were doing. So after we left and started with another client, we discovered that these guys created a separate company. So by talking to one of the receptionists, I discovered that they made millions of dollars with an idea that we didn't even recognize. We had found three niches in their accounts payable that they hadn't recognized. They thought they were making 5 and 10% margins. We found three niches, one of which was airports, another which was industrial manufacturing, I think a third was schools and universities, that were 50 to 70% margin. So they turned around, took, you know, because they had the rights to my postcards and my newsletters and stuff, and licensed all of this to other janitorial supply companies for a lot of money, saying, hey, you think you're making 10% margins, but how'd you like to make 70% margin? We've got a list of three niches that you can go to and sold them the system.
That's the end of part two. Please continue to part three of my Glenn Osborne interview series.